our government.
Iran.
Your government.
Proliferation.
Public option.
A serious insurgency.
We do have a plan. We're working on it.
Just to give you a sense of perspective. Oh,
it's Monday. That means it's time to check out the agenda for the week. Joining us today is Marcus Mabry, international business editor for our partner, The New York Times. Also joining us from Afghanistan is Charles Haviland, a correspondent for our partner, the BBC. Good morning. Charles, can you tell us more information about these helicopter crashes? I understand that in one particular case, the Taliban has claimed that they shot the first helicopter down out of the sky.
There are unconfirmed reports that the Taliban have indeed claimed to have been behind, I think, both of these helicopter incidents. They both were reported by the NATO-led force here at different times. And as you have been saying, they have reported a large number of American casualties specifically. In the first incident, said to have been a mid-air collision, four American service members were reported to have been killed, and that was in the south of Afghanistan. And the other incident that was reported was in the west, a traditionally less troubled part of the country, but one where in patches Taliban activity has been increasing. And this one was even more deadly. It was said that seven U.S. troops and three U.S. civilians were killed. And not only that, about 25, 26 civilians, service people and civilians, both American and Afghan, were reported to have been injured.
Wow.
In the second crash, though, the army or the military is saying that was a collision of two helicopters in the southern part of Afghanistan. Do we have any confirmation on that?
The southern crash, the collision of two helicopters killing four American service people. The only report we had for several hours was that one from the U.S. military speaking within the NATO umbrella, if you like. But now, as I say, we do have some agency reports that the Taliban are claiming to have been behind both of the helicopter incidents, both the mid-air collision and the later one with the higher death toll.
Does this kind of violence, I assume it's going to make it more difficult for those who are preparing for the runoff election on November 7th?
Well, I think it's a reminder of the difficulties this country faces. The fact is that the whole election episode, if you like, starting from the campaigns and then the first round of the presidential voting in August, and then the dragging on for weeks with the allegations of fraud surfacing, and now the decision to hold a second round. This is all, if you like, a big political distraction, some people would say, from the real business, which is trying to actually quell the insurgency in Afghanistan. It's a reminder that this insurgency is actually growing in strength. And we've got to be aware that this year has seen more of the foreign service people dying in this country than any other year since the invasion, which precipitated the fall of the Taliban in 2001.
Okay, Charles Haviland is a correspondent for our partner, the BBC. He joined us from Kabul. So we turn now to Marcus Mabry, international business editor for our partner, the New York Times. And Marcus, it appears we have Chuck Schumer saying what a couple weeks ago would have been a very surprising thing.
I think we're very close to getting the 60 votes we need to move forward. And my guess is that the public option level playing field with the state opt-out will be in the bill.
That's Chuck Schumer on Meet the Press yesterday. He says they're getting close to 60 votes on the public option. Do you think he's right?
Yeah, I think he is right. There's been an extraordinary change, Les, as you say. Just a few weeks ago, we were all saying the public option is dead. There's no way there's going to be a government plan that will compete with private insurers
right.
to insure Americans for their health care. And then suddenly it's back. It's a resurrection of the public plan.
Maybe it never died. Like just call me wacky, hey?
Well, would you be saying down that the media somehow over...
Just call me kind of wacky,
ignore that guy over there.
The Democrats certainly have a new backbone on this health care deal, and it's interesting because... A lot of it has to do with shifting poll numbers that show more Americans in favor of it than a majority, in fact. And we also see that might have something to do with the fact that right about now, most of us are filling out our health care options for next year, those of us who are employer plans, which is the majority of Americans. And we're seeing massive increases in premiums. So people who are lucky enough to have jobs still and who may even be getting raises will have those raises mostly eliminated by the increase in their health care premiums.
Inklings from any Republicans who may go for the public option?
Well, no, not yet. It's interesting. What we are seeing is however, a change on the part of Olympia Snowe.
Yeah, they bought her vote with that bank deal that Obama announced late last week, it sounds like.
Well, she would say that it's much bigger than that. She would say this is about, she does want health care reform, she would say. And
right.
she would say that what she has changed her opinion on is a trigger. The option,
right.
you could have a trigger where if you have a monopoly, monopoly by one or two insurers in a certain market, say the state of Maine, where she's from, where there is this monopoly problem, then there would be a trigger that would kick in a government option that would be applicable just there. Now, the smartest thing about this, I think, is the fact that the Democrats are saying, well, states can choose to opt out now. So there'll be a government option, and it's states that choose not to allow that to compete in their
states. So they're kind
of
putting states. That decision back on their states. So since John mentioned the bank thing, let's talk a little bit about that. The Obama administration is supposed to announce a bill today that'll give it the power to dismantle unhealthy banks. So is this the response to the idea that there are some banks are too large to fail?
This is their attempted response. The biggest surprise of the cataclysm in capitalism that we had in the last year is the fact that we said this was, you know, the worst thing since the Great Depression, and yet there's been very little reform that's taken place since then. We're back to pretty much where we were before, only with that actually now we have fewer institutions that are even more powerful because there are fewer of them.
Because they all absorbed one another, right?
Is this exactly?
Are they just going back to Glass-Steagall and separating out the trading
the
from
old the old regulatory regime?
Some are saying they should. This administration is not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They're very explicit. They're not going to go that far. They don't think they have to go that far. They think they can actually have living wills, in essence, for corporations, that corporations will mostly draw up themselves of how to unwind them if they get into real trouble.
But how do you prevent a bank from getting too big to fail, except, oh, we noticed it's too big to fail?
You know, this is what Paul Volcker, this is what Mervyn King, the leading British regulator, have been saying. They've been saying you have to actually break them up now before they're too big to fail. It's not clear. It's certain the administration will not go that far. It's not clear that the plan they're going to roll out this week will be enough.
It's very interesting.
Okay, Marcus Mabry, thanks so much, international business editor for our partner, The New York Times.